the basement of the mud flap house, flapping and poo, and their underwear thing raising news, and poo licks herself, and flap contemplates manly things. He thinks about guns and trucks and stooges three, men and boys, and that doesn't sound right. He thinks about boobs and bacon and power tools. Come with me, let your mask you leave. Oh, won't you come with me and remask you leave?
Aloha, Mud Babies, Pod People, and inhabitants of the planet Earth. It is I, your tiki leader, Steve Mudflap McGrew. I have got a great show for you today. My guest will be the one, the only, Dwayne Allen. Who? Dwayne Allen, the lead singer of the world-renowned Oak Ridge Boys. As you know, we love the Oak Ridge Boys around here. Get them on as much as we can. Had Joe on, Joe Bonzel, and now we get a chance to get Dwayne. Now, I got to let you know, when I first recorded this, the computer didn't work properly. It cut off at the start, and I missed a little bit of the story. So let me tell you what happens. Dwayne, oh, you can hear the dogs back there too. Dwayne is telling me how he used to fine some of the Oak Ridge Boys, two of them, when they were late to something. They had to put a dollar in a jar, and how this money added up, and then finally they got enough money to buy a VCR. That's what's going to happen.
This was back during the time when we had these VCRs. We got the first VCR that ever come into Nashville. We got it because we got one of these tech guys that runs our office and stuff. So he was always getting us all the latest stuff. So we had this one VCR machine, and one day we were all up looking at our movies and things that we had taped. And I brought out the box of movies of all of our VCR videos. And I said, I would like to thank, and I'll not call their name, these two people for supplying the Oak Ridge Boys with all of these videos, because it's because of them being late that we all have something to watch. And suddenly they got on time.
They realized how much money they had spent, huh?
They had bought the whole collection. Two guys.
Now, do you remember what that first VCR cost you?
No, but I remember what it was. I remember what the first video we had.
What's that?
The Shootist.
Ah, John Wayne.
Right. And we were up in Red Deer, Alberta, working a week that felt like a year. And we were working the fair. They call them expositions or something like that up there, but it was basically a fair.
Yeah, those Canadians and their fancy words.
Yeah, and that's okay. We work a lot of those. But we were staying at this motel, and they had a room that had a connection where you could hook up things to it, and they had never hooked up a VCR machine to this TV. But they had kind of had it set up for business meetings and stuff where business people could hook up their display things and all this stuff. So our guy rigged it to where we could get our DVR, our video player, VCR player, to work on it. And we watched The Shootist every night after the show. And we know every line that ever happened in The Shootist.
Yeah. Was that, I believe that was one of Richard Boone's last movies, too, wasn't it?
Well, I'm not sure if it was the last one, but I can sure tell you that that's the one where I think I've got cancer. You know?
And he was sitting,
lady, you sure do look good in that corset.
That was the one where John Wayne walked around with the pillow.
Yeah, you know, he was pretty sick. So it's kind of interesting. Are you taping?
I am. Yeah. I should. I just, as soon as I called you, it was going. I should let people know before we get going that.
That's no problem.
Yeah. I am talking to Dwayne Allen from the Oak Ridge Boys, And I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us here.
Well, you're one of our dear friends.
Well,
and we got to know you, first of all, through your comedy work. And then we became friends and realized how important you were in the radio business as far as, like, playing country music. And all of our association with you has just grown over the years. We also know how much you love baseball because we all went to see a great baseball game together where you lost your keys.
Yes, that's... That story I love to tell. There's nothing like being with one of country's greatest supergroups and losing your keys and having them help you look for your car keys.
We looked everywhere. Well, didn't you find them in the in your girlfriend's purse or something?
No, they were in Lost and Found. Somebody had turned them in.
Okay, I didn't know where they were.
Yeah, because I had you guys. I was like, the bus is waiting for you. Y'all go ahead and just leave. I'll find the keys. But one of my favorite memories, I guess, of all times will be hearing William Lee say, "Maybe you left them in the bathroom."
And maybe you did. Is that where they found them?
No, they had just fallen. Somebody had found them in the aisle of the stadium.
Okay.
They had just fallen off my pocket.
At least you got to drive home and get into your house. That's an important thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, let me continue on John Wayne, because actually we got to meet him. We were working down in San Antonio, and we were both working the college conference where they all get together and buy talent for the following year.
Uh-huh.
And John Wayne was speaking the night before, the day that we were doing that night show. John had spoken in the daytime, and we were both headed to Los Angeles, where we were working the Grammy Award show. And what we didn't realize is that John Wayne was going to be on that plane.
Oh, with you guys?
We always can remember that it was working the Grammy Award show because somebody bought our tickets and we were in first class, which is about the only time we ever spend that much money is when somebody else spends it for us.
Uh-huh.
And so here we are in first class, and Joe is on the window side. He and I are on the first row on the window side of first class. And I looked around to my left, and immediately across the aisle from me was John Wayne. So I knew what a freak Joe is for John Wayne, even more so than me.
Well, you watch The Shootist every night.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just amazing. And so I knew that Joe would just freak out if he knew that John Wayne was sitting next to us. So I turned to Joe and I said, "Okay, Joe, look me in the eye. I want to tell you something." He said, "Okay." He's getting ready for some kind of a heavy discussion or something. And I said, "I'm going to tell you something, but I want you to promise me that you will not freak out, okay?" And he said, "Okay, Ace, I promise you." What is it? I said, "Well, you got to promise me that you're not going to freak out. And I'm going to tell you, John Wayne is sitting immediately to my left in the aisle right across, even with us." And, like, so he kind of went back in his chair a little bit. And I could feel it building. I could feel his energy just like, just building every second. I could just feel it, him getting more uptight and just about ready to explode. And in about 5 minutes, he came flying over me and stood right in front of John Wayne and said, "I'm just walking with the only boys. I don't want about you, whatever." And he told him his history in about 30 seconds. And John Wayne said, "Well, nice to meet you there, Joe. I love the Oak Ridge Boys." And Joe was probably standing about 3 inches off the ground. I mean, he was just flying.
He met one of his stars.
John Wayne was just—he was so cool. I mean, he just completely embraced Joe and laughed at him and thought Joe was so cute that he did what he did. He picked up very much on Joe's little boy character that is so—it's so real. You know, we deal with that all the time, but John Wayne didn't know Joe at that point, but boy, he got acquainted with him really quick.
Real fast.
And he just relaxed Joe as much as you could relax Joe at that point. And they talked there for a while. Of course, I was right in the conversation, but John Wayne really loved the way Joe's little boy just jumped out and it was uncontrollable. And he was so graceful. And so Joe finally came over and sat back down, and like he was just almost shaking. And we talked about what a great experience this is. And we noticed as the flight went along, we tried not to just stare at him, but every once in a while we'd look over there, and he went to sleep, and we just kept watching him. And Joe elbowed me and said, "Look, John Wayne is sleeping, and there's not, and there's nothing drizzling out of his mouth.
Did he?
His mouth is closed. He doesn't look like he's sleeping. He just looks perfect. You know.
Did he snore?
He didn't snore. He did nothing drizzled out of his mouth or nothing. I mean, he was perfectly John Wayne.
That's right. That's how perfect John Wayne was right there.
Yeah. I mean, you know, nothing disappointed. I mean, the Joe jumping over me, he just flew over me and went right into, I'm Joe Bond over there, it's so fast, it was like it was a tape recorder going on extra high speed.
It's kind of like that little kid from Christmas Story when he shouts out, "I want a Red Ryder BB gun with a compass in the stock."
Right, exactly. It's just a little boy in him, and it was precious, you know. So we kept watching, and we didn't bother him anymore, and we started getting close to Los Angeles, and he woke up, and of course, every time something would happen, Joe would elbow me and say, "John Wayne woke up." <You know? laughs> Okay, Joe, it's cool. You got to meet him. Everything's cool, you know.
He's still
just freaking out, man, you know. But he's keeping it cool, and I'm in between him and John, so everything's cool.
It sounds like you were sitting next to Barney Fife. That'd be how Barney Fife would react.
That's the little boy in him, and Barney Fife, he's got that little boy in him too that I love.
Uh-huh.
Well, we started getting close to Los Angeles, and the stewardess came back, and John Wayne had woke up, and so she said, "Mr. Wayne, we have a fruit tray here. Is there anything on here you would like?" He said, "I think I'd like an apple." You know? And like, you're more used to hearing John Wayne say, "Well, I think I'll drink a whiskey," you know?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Just to hear John Wayne say, "Well, I think I'll take an apple." Oh, man, those memories are so cool. And he told us goodbye when we left on the plane, and gave us the ultimate John Wayne experience. We had just gotten through watching The Shootist for hours, and he told us while we were there talking with him, he said, Joe finally settled down and asked him if he has anything on the books that he's making. And he said, "Well, I'm making this thing, I believe he called it the triad or the triple something. I forget what it was." And he said, "That's in the make. I'm really excited about that. And that's going to be my next movie." Well, he never got to make that. But we got to the Grammys, and that's the Grammy Award show where they introduced John Wayne, and he came out. and we had just gotten to meet him and have a wonderful, wonderful John Wayne experience.
That's very cool.
Yeah, it is. You know, being in the business, as you know, we are afforded a lot of opportunities that most people would consider once-in-a-lifetime experiences, and that was our once-in-a-lifetime experience from the Oak Ridge Boys and getting to meet and to know a little bit one of our heroes, John Wayne. He's still one of my heroes. My movie hero has always been John Wayne, and he just went up a notch or two in the to the very highest level that very few other people get to.
Yeah. What is your favorite John Wayne movie, other than having to watch The Shootist over and over?
Well, I'd have to say that still is my favorite movie. It just made a lasting impression. I got to tell you, I've got every movie that John Wayne ever made. So I'm not just a fan. I'm pretty much a fanatic. I have all of them.
Yeah. Are you
all the way back to, you know, She Wore Yellow Ribbon, you know? I mean, I've got all of them.
I think probably McClintock and...
Yeah, those are cool.
The Cowboys. That's probably two of my favorite.
Cowboys is a really good, fun movie. And the ones he did with Glenn Campbell I thought were really good.
Yeah, True Grit you liked?
Yeah, I thought Glenn Campbell did a great job in that movie. And I liked the remake of True Grit, too. I thought that was done really well. I mean, I really hesitated to go, but I waited until I could get into a real big screen type of setup where the surround sound and everything was just really phenomenal. And I really got into the remake of True Grit. I thought they did a great job on that.
I do, too. I like the way that they stuck to the dialogue sounded like the Old West. You know, they tried to speak in terms. It wasn't like modern people acting like a Western.
Well, it's kind of like the TV series Deadwood and Justified. You know, the writers that write those type of series... they get into the local dialects, and I really like that too. I just think it's cool to try to go back and do it the right way.
Yeah.
And I like that kind of writing and producing and acting. I think that's a cool thing to do.
Now you brought up Justified. Do you like that show?
Oh yeah, man. They're friends of ours. In fact, one of the shows a couple of seasons ago when they were busting four guys and they came walking into the scene, Braylon says, it looks like the Oak Ridge Boys have appeared.
Yeah, I love that show. I think that's one of my favorite shows on TV.
Yeah, we get off on that show. We like Braylon a lot. And actually, the guy that co-stars with him, I can't bring out his name, Crowder,
yeah,
that co-stars with him,
mm-hmm.
I think he's a great actor, man. And they built up some good character storylines in that where it's all almost unbelievable how those two guys remain the two main characters after all the crap they go through every season.
Right. Now, this guy that plays Boyd Crowder, I don't know if you watch Sons of Anarchy. Do you watch that?
No, I haven't watched that one. Some of the guys on the bus have, and watch Homeland and the Bridges thing. I've got all of that stuff recorded on my DVR up in the front of the bus, but all of those shows so far have been mainly in the back of the bus. That's
right.
Joe and Richard and Derek.
Yeah.
And now, William Lee and I up in front, we watch the Boardwalk Empire. That's one of our movies we watch, features we watch up in the front. And I like the A&E show, Larimore.
Oh, Longmire.
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 I like that show.
I love that show. I didn't think I was going to like it. I watched the first, and I thought, oh, it's okay. And then I watched it, and it sucks you in, and you love every character on that show.
Yeah, it's kind of low production budget, it looks like, but they bring in good people. I mean, our good buddy Earl Brown, who has become a real good friend of ours, he showed up in there, and I was so hoping that he would stick around, but they killed him off. But and Earl Brown has showed up in Justified too, and so we have some pretty good friends around in the business that we kind of, it's a people business, you know. You get into things like Deadwood because of the people, and one of the people in Deadwood is now on the Nashville series.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, he's become a really good friend of ours. And being in Nashville, we run into him quite often. And I actually went down on one of the shows and was kind of a stand-in back with Pete Fisher and some of the people at the Opry backstage and watched the taping. In fact, I was on one of the Nashville shows. My wife was doing backup, and I was on one of the shows. My son has been on Nashville too. He's singing tenor with singing harmony with one of the Cowboy Stars on there.
Oh, nice! So, what do you think of the new Nashville series? Is it pretty realistic?
I think a lot of the storyline is realistic. A lot of the new entries that they're bringing into it, they're actually true as well. I just don't like to glorify a lot of the irregular type of characters that they're bringing in. I think they're there. I think they're there in all society. But I don't think to glorify it is something that I would do. But they didn't ask me, so...
yeah, I mentioned that to the girlfriend, Janet, the other night, because we watched the show, and I said, they're sure bringing the gay singers to the front.
Yeah, I don't really knock that. I've got four gay people in my family. You know, I love them. They're my blood relatives, and I have no illusions about the fact that that's one of the things in our society that is on the top burner, and I can understand that, but I think more than anything, it's Hollywood coming in trying to make Nashville what Hollywood already is.
Right.
And I don't think Nashville is quite that far.
Right.
As far as pushing it.
Right.
I think we recognize it. I've dealt with alternative lifestyle people all of my career. I've had many of them write for my publishing company, and they're my dear friends, and I love them like brothers or sisters. Just like I love my family, that's just something that we all live with, and I have no problem with any of it. It's not my lifestyle, but I think probably what we're seeing in the Nashville show is the Hollywood angle.
Right. Like you and I both know, like you just said, I'm well aware of the gay singers in Nashville, some who've had great hits, and then their careers kind of got slowed down because of it. I've never thought that was right.
Well, I don't get into the things that some people call controversy. I just recognize them. I just don't make a big deal out of it. And I know that we have alternative lifestyle people in our business. I know we have people who use drugs, who are drunks, who mess around on their wives or husbands. I know all of that. It's just that that's not what I'm about.
Right.
What I'm about is making good music and keeping the Oak Ridge Boys at the top of our game. And I've been doing it for 47 and a half years. And I feel like that is my challenge in life, is to keep the Oak Ridge Boys to where we're comfortable in the amount of money that we're able to make. And it takes 150 days a year to make all of the computer readouts balance on the bottom of the balance sheet. So we work this year 150 dates. And we turned down all the rest. And I'm working now on dates. We're at 81 dates now for 2014. And I'm already working on the framework of 2015. And I work usually a couple of years ahead of the group. By the time I get to a date that we've worked, I actually approved that date usually 2 years ago. So what I do when I get to a date that we work today is I just sit back here and enjoy living and enjoying the date. I did my homework in the wee hours of the nights and all day on my computer and on the phone 2 years ago to make that happen.
Do you still enjoy the road like you used to?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I get to see America in a bubble, man. I'm in this beautiful black Prevost bus, and I open up all the windows and window shades and ride down America seeing the most beautiful country on earth, and I'm about 3 or 4 feet above higher than all the cars that are rolling along the side of me. I don't even see them unless I look down at them, and I see the top of them.
Yeah,
I see all the beautiful scenery in the country, and just, you know, every once in a while I realize the Oak Ridge boys must be getting hot again. A beautiful, a card load of beautiful girls just passed by and mooned us. I think that's cool.
Now, have y'all had that happen?
Happened last week.
God bless you.
Yes, he certainly has. Yeah, they flashed us. And the bus driver said, hey, you ain't believing this. Well, I just thought, man, we're getting hot again.
Oh, well, you guys really are. I mean, to be honest, don't you feel that there has been a massive resurgence in the Oak Ridge boys?
Well, my son told me one time, my son's kind of a rock and roller, but he studies all the fields of music. He said, Daddy, if you stay in business long enough and you stay relevant, when you get old enough, you will become hip again. And he made the example of Tony Bennett.
Exactly.
Or the Rolling Stones, you know, and we never have quit. So what I see is that all my Christmas dates that I'm looking ahead right now to about 25, 26 more shows before December 23rd, our grosses that we, well, our net that we take home is 20% above last year. And our first four shows of our Christmas tour, plus we've done one already, have already been sold out. So I have no complaints. I do study the business from one end to the other, and I do notice that there is a surge in our take home money that we're making on the road.
Is that from CDs and T-shirts and merchandise, too?
No, that's ticket sales. That's hard ticket sales.
Oh, good.
And as long when we have hard ticket sales of people buying tickets, we don't have sponsors. We have giveaway sponsors. We associate with charities. We pass along the good fortune we have of just being able and being blessed to be able to sing all these years. This year we're associating with a company from out there in Colorado, Compassion International.
Uh-huh.
And we're passing along the good fortune of the fact we have lots of people coming to see us and asking them to sponsor a child so that they can help get some of these needy kids around the world out of poverty.
Well, that's one of the reasons that people love the Oak Ridge Boys right there. You're good people.
You know, there was a time when we had a song called Thank God for Kids in 1982. And with that hit came a responsibility. And I'm reminded of it every day that I do a show. And I look out into the show and out into the audience and I see special needs children everywhere. And they all know Thank God for Kids, and they all know Elvira. And when those songs come on, we communicate with the special needs children in our world today, and I feel that is a responsibility that God put on us to not blow it. So what I feel is important for the Oak Ridge Boys is to just observe what happens when we do those two songs and realize that we've got to do something to give back and pass along the good fortune we've experienced to try to help some of these children and special need kids. Some of them are in their adult. I have one particular special needs child who was supposed to die before 6 months old. And they just kept him alive, and in 81, Elvira came out. And when Elvira came out, he came alive. He literally started responding to everything the doctors, the special needs people, asked him to do. All they had to do to get him to respond was play Elvira.
So it's true when they say music touches people.
He's 33 years old today, and he's still alive.
That's amazing.
They never expected him to live beyond 6 months old. Today, in the special home he's in, the way they get him to take his medicine, to eat his food, to put on his clothes, to wash and bathe him, they play Elvira, and he'll do anything they ask him to do.
That's an amazing story.
It's a true story.
Oh, man.
And I'm trying to get him to our shows, and the first attempt that we got, his health wasn't good that day, so we had to move it back, and we're still trying to get him to a show. When we get in the area, and the closest one we could get to was 50 miles, and I had everything set up for him, but he was not having a good day.
Yeah.
So I said, that's okay. A good day for him, if we're anywhere close, is the perfect day for us. So I will make arrangements no matter where it is, no matter what day it is. When it's a good day for him, if you can get him to our shows, he will be treated like a king.
Yeah.
So we're working on that, and I've got a whole file full of those kind of examples. We were in the Las Vegas, Nevada one time, and we had a woman die 5 times in our show. Her heart stopped 5 times.
What?
And she was up at the one of the front tables, and we moved all the tables out. We just stopped our show and sat on the edge of the stage. And the medics and everybody was there, and they hit one of those defibrillators in her heart, got it going, then it stopped. They beat on her chest. They gave her artificial respiration. They did everything that you can imagine to get that woman to come back. Yeah, come back. And finally they got her sustained a little bit and got her regulated enough that they could get her on a stretcher and got her out and took her out of the room. We kept checking on her, and then got her to the hospital. And 1 year later, we were doing an outside show in Laughlin, and this woman came up to the front of the stage and said, I'm the woman that died 5 times at your show last year. Thank God. You know, what do you do after a woman dies 5 times? In your show, you can't do trying to love two women.
No, Was the show pretty much over after that?
No, I mean, we were in right at the beginning of our show. They took her out, and I asked our road people to stay in touch with the medics and give me a report and come and tell me on the edge of the stage. And we finished the show, and by the end of the show, I told the people, They really regulated her heart, and she is right now still in intensive care, but she is stabilizing somewhat. And basically, if you stop to think about it, what kind of songs the Oak Ridge Boys do can you do right after a woman has died? I mean, you don't. There's just a lot of songs that we do. You don't do the Y'all Come Back Saloon.
Well, that
you don't drain on.
Y'all Come Back would be a good one, because you'd be like, Y'all Come Back to Life.
Yeah, you don't do I Guess It Never Hurts to Hurt Sometimes. Because that was written by Randy Van Warmer when his father died. I mean, really, stop to think about it. So we dug back in our past and started digging out Just a Little Talk with Jesus Makes It Right, and dug out a whole bunch of old gospel songs and did about, I guess, 5 of them, and eased back in then to our show. And as the show progressed, I kept getting these reports that they think she's stabilized and she's going to be okay for the time being, enough that we could finish our show.
Yeah. Now, I had you had this happen right in the very front of the show. I had, doing stand-up one night, I had a guy have a heart attack in the back of the room. So there was commotion, but I didn't know what it was, And so, you know, you don't know whether to stop. And they kind of turned on the lights in the back and took somebody out. And later on, I was like, well, what happened? They go, oh, a guy was laughing and just passed out, had a heart attack in the back. And he, same thing. He was okay. He was, again, okay. But it's weird when you don't really know what's going on in the room. Have you ever had something like that happen?
Yeah, unfortunately, we've had some people that didn't make it.
Oh, really?
And, yeah, and we've had some people that the last song they ever heard was Oom Papa Mau Mau. And, yeah, that's happened. I mean, we've been around. I've been here 47 and a half years. I've seen so many different things that I can't even number them all. I do remember a show out in California where it was outside, and there's a pretty big drop-off down below in front of the stage. Not an orchestra pit, but the stage was pretty high. So looking down into that section, there were three rows there of the high-pay people who pay an extra $50 or something to get to sit right next to the stage. And in the front row were three young girls. And one was a little bit overweight, not very overweight, but somewhat. And I kept watching her because she was going crazy, clapping, and just, you could tell she was a super fan. And I kept watching her as the show went along, and I noticed about three or four songs into the show that she was really slowing down on the way she was acting. And we got to one song, and I saw her close her eyes and started listing to the right. And I thought, oh, my, what are we? I ran to the side of the stage. I said, go get medics immediately and watch this girl right in immediately in front of me. And I no longer said that until she fell off her chair.
Oh.
And I thought we had really lost one. But she basically was a diabetic and had not taken her insulin. And she was having a diabetic or lack of insulin attack.
Yeah.
And so they got to her, and her friend with her told them, look at her arm, and she had on a bracelet that stated what her diabetic condition was. So they got her to the edge of the stage. They got some insulin in her, and she was fine, you know, the next day. She was fine.
Yeah.
You never know.
I have to say, it's pretty amazing and astute of you to be able to be able, you know, you're doing a show, and yet you're that aware of your audience. That's pretty amazing.
Well, I'm one of those guys. I watch people. I feel like they're the middle part of my plan of what it takes to communicate. I draw up everything I do in 1, 2, 3 step formulas. First of all, I feel like God gives me a light, and it's my responsibility to shine my light. The people that come to see us and pay to buy a ticket, they don't have a light. They have a reflector. And God gives them a reflector. And it's right in their heart. It's right in their eyes. It's right in their every movement. It's up to me to communicate to them my light.
Mm-hmm.
And if I get it back, then I send it right. If I don't get it back, I'm not sending my light right, because I look at everybody who comes to see us as wanting to be there to communicate back with me what I'm giving to them in my light. And they have a reflector that shines it back to me, and when I get it back, that's the third step. It's complete. I feel it. You as a comedian, you can get up there and tell the funniest jokes in the world and just break yourself up. But if your people are not getting it and giving it back to you, then you'll fall flat on your butt.
Right.
And your people, they pay for a reflector too. It's up to you to shine it right. We worked an outdoor gig at Jamboree in the Hills a few years ago, and this country act who, I don't know about his attitude, but anyhow, he came he came to the edge of the stage and he said, "That's a dead crowd out there, man. Don't overdo it, because you ain't nothing you gonna do, go work with them." Well, he's saying that to the wrong people. When we got ready to go out there, Joe entered the stage by jumping the monitor speakers that were on the edge of the stage. He came flying onto the stage and slid into the microphones like somebody sliding into second base. And we all ran on, and just completely before we ever sang a song, that crowd was wild. Well, we don't look at things like some people do. We feel like we're called entertainers, and it's our job to entertain.
Right.
That's what people paid for. They didn't come out there to praise us or say how good looking we are or, boy, what a nice set of clothes you got. I mean, they came to be entertained. And all of that's important, but you've got to entertain them. You've got to let them know they are important. And they complete the cycle. They complete my 1-2-3 step plan. Because I can be as good and sing as great as I want to, but if they don't get it, if I don't give it to them, then they'll not give it back
right
to me.
I kind of have this thing. I agree with your 1-2-3 step. I have this thing. I read a book years ago. It was called Super Beings. And it's about if you believe that God is your father, and like any other father in the world, you pass on DNA traits. So, you know, that everybody has a little bit of godlike powers. And in this book, it says that if God is the light, which we all believe, that you are the projector. And so if God is shining through you, whatever slide you have in your head is what you're projecting to the rest of the world. So sometimes you need to change the slide that's in your head. That, you know, if you're projecting a negative thing, well, they're going to get negative. But if you put a positive slide, God's light shines through the positive. So I've always looked at it.
I totally agree with that philosophy. I think that's great, because we're the projector and they got the reflector.
Right. So, yeah.
And we need to project what's in our heart. I usually tell these young people, come up and talk to me all the time asking for advice and vocal work and how do you sell something and how do you sing without ever having vocal nodes all these years. I mean, I've never had a vocal problem in my whole life. And what? How does that happen? Well, I sing right, first of all, and your vocal work starts with your diaphragm. It starts with breathing correctly. Well, how do you breathe correctly? Well, put a newborn baby on its back and watch what its stomach does.
Uh-huh.
When it breathes, its stomach raises. Well, that's the way you're supposed to breathe. That's your diaphragm. God shows us in a baby before the baby has got time to learn bad habits. They come into the world breathing right. It's we human beings who want to take a quick breath and from your shoulders up and sing from that. Well, we wonder why in the world our voice goes. It's because we're taking those real quick breath like that. All you're doing is putting wind on your vocal cords and drying them out. Well, when you try to make a noise with them, they're not moist, so you crack your vocal cords. Well, I look at it as a simple way. I've got a simple plan of 1-2-3 for everything. Diaphragm over the top of your mouth and out to the audience. And how do you make an example of that? Okay, call the voice a rope. You can't push a rope.
True.
So tie the bottom end of the rope to your diaphragm, bring it up over the top of your head, and hand it to the audience and tie a knot on the other end, and they'll pull the tone from you. You don't force anything. You can't force a rope. You can't make them take it. Let them have it, and they'll do it for you. Give it to them. Don't force it on them. You can't force a rope.
Now, have you
give it to them, they'll pull it from you. You'll never have a vocal problem if you'll just do that.
Now, have you sang all your life? Is this a natural thing, or did you have lessons at some point?
I've got a degree in classical music. I studied opera music for Metropolitan Opera Stars.
I did not know that.
Oh, that's okay. You don't have to. you asked me though.
No, that's beautiful.
I try not to let it bother my singing.
It doesn't affect the country part of you, is what you're saying.
Yeah, well, the thing is, I studied with R.G. Webb, who was the number one tenor in the Metropolitan Opera, and he was at my college finishing his doctorate degree. So I studied with him first, and his understudy at the Metropolitan Opera was William Abbott. Well, when R.G. Webb graduated with his doctorate, he went to the London Philharmonic Orchestra and became the number one tenor with the London Philharmonic Orchestra. Well, William Abbott then came from the Metropolitan Opera in New York and came to my college to finish his doctorate degree, following in the steps of his mentor, R.G. Webb. So I got to study the second set of vocal work was with William Abbott. So I got the number one and number two tenor for the Metropolitan Opera and the number one tenor for the London Philharmonic Orchestra, and those are the people I studied with.
Well, that explains why you're like one of the best voices in country music, too.
Well, you said that, and I said thank you very much. I don't really, I don't push that in me. My big thing is keeping it all going. And I work really hard on my computer and on my telephone. I do very few interviews. I'm doing this interview because of who you are.
Well, I appreciate that. I know when we
talk, you're a friend. Richard and Joe do most all of our interviews. Richard does all the media because radio stations love to talk to Richard because they like to talk low with him. And, of course, Joe is really outgoing, and he does a lot of the high-tech interviews and stuff that we do. I run the business. I work on the business angle, and I work on my computer 24/7 or on my phone, and I'm always doing that. So I just got my work done a little early today so that I could talk with you.
And I appreciate that. I know the one day that we were up in Colorado, you guys were doing a concert, and we came on the bus, the girlfriend and I, and you played us pieces of the last album before it was released.
Right.
Shade Comes Free with the Tree.
Right.
And mm-hmm. And the other one was Put the Ring on It.
What You Gonna Do.
What You Gonna Do, yeah. And I
right.
And I thought, you know, right then and there, this sounds like the Oak Ridge Boys. You guys have kept it fresh. You keep a certain sound and you keep it alive. And I was very disappointed, and I shouldn't say that country radio did not grasp those songs the way that they should have. Because those were great songs. And
that's okay.
Yeah?
That's okay. We've had our time on major country radio. I have no regrets. I mean, I remember when we were hitting, everything we were releasing was going right to the top of the charts. I couldn't understand why Charlie Louvin wasn't getting played or Jim Ed Brown wasn't getting played. They're all great singers, too. I wondered, you know, why doesn't country radio play them? It's a cycle. It's the way it's always been. Major country radio is taking over where rock and roll was, and it's a young market. They go for the youthful acts, and I understand that. I don't have any problem with that. We had our time there. We still get played on classic country. We get played on secondary country, and we have our dates. Radio is just one way to make it. Another way to make it is television. John Davidson has never had a hit record, but you know him, don't you?
Right, you do know.
Yeah, he made it by television. We've also made it by just being good every time we walk on the stage. So you can make it by radio, by television, or by just being dang good every time you walk on the stage. We've always had that. So I use radio to acquaint us with a bigger audience. And when radio played out, we went to television and we did 10 years of specials with Feed the Children. And those played in more markets than radio gets into. So the only thing as far as the Oak Ridge Boys are concerned that we need to do is just to stay visible.
Right.
And if they don't hear us on radio, okay, turn on your TV. You'll see that we're still in the business. At our age, the biggest challenge is just letting people know we're still doing it, you know?
Well, you guys are played all the time. I text Joe every once in a
while. By the way, that's my 1-2-3 step plan on how to make it, by the way.
What's that? Radio, they keep moving to the next?
Radio, TV, or being dang good every time you walk on stage.
1-2-3.
I told you I've got a 1-2-3 step plan on everything. There's a reason for that. You keep it simple. You can always remember 1-2-3. You did just then.
Right. 1-2-3.
And you never have a tie. 3, you can't tie. So you can always remember it. Why do we have 4 people in our group? Well, Richard, he's always doubling somebody else's part, because there's only 3 notes in a harmony situation. Ooh. He's singing the foundation. Yeah, he's always singing the foundation of a major harmony chord. He's doubling somebody else. So there's still 3 in that, too.
Look at this. The world. Well, I've always heard there's the 3. The 3s are like the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost.
That's where it all started. That's where it all started. That was my first 3 plan. That's when I was in gospel music. And then that's when I was a little boy and I learned what the Holy Trinity is.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured if it's good enough for God, it's good for me, good enough for me to keep all my plans of how I do the music business in a threesome. And that's where it comes from.
That's beautiful. I mean, it's simple and it's easy to remember, like you said. But now, what would you say to just an everyday person on the street, just an average listener? What would you say to make their life better? What would be the average person's 1-2-3?
For an average person,
yeah,
find a job that you love to do, and if you don't love what you're doing, find something you love to do, and get your heart right with God. And get control of all of your habits. That would be 3 important things.
True. Now, let me ask you, I'll ask you one in kind of weird, important question, because I hear this all the time, or I see it on Facebook, of how many people do you see in this day and age that are just totally do not believe that there possibly could be a God? So,
I don't really pay attention to them, because I have to say, well, how does all this operate otherwise?
Well,
they can't explain that to me, and I know I didn't come from a monkey. I know my daddy and mama.
Right.
So they may think that they did. Well, if they did, then fine. That's why we got a species, you know. But I didn't come from a monkey. I know I didn't. And I don't care how far back you go. There's never been anybody connected, and as much as we're finding in the icebergs all around the country, why isn't there somebody half in between?
Yeah, I can see that. I just think
okay, well, so, you know, science is fine, but science has to be proven, and that's what makes it science. They prove things. They've never proven that we came from a monkey. Well, I can prove, because of my faith, that there's a God. So I don't pay any attention to those people. They got their own selves to convince, and I don't pay any attention to that argument at all because it makes no sense to me.
Well, don't you see a correlation in today's society of, like, the people that there's so much more crime and violence and everything, yet we see, you know, God being removed from everything. So,
well, you remove the Ten Commandments from our lifestyle, and then what do you put a value system on?
Yeah, I've always said, if people don't want to believe the Ten Commandments, just think of them as 10 great rules to live by. That's just 10 great things. I mean, what's the problem that anybody would have with, like, honor your father and mother, don't lie, don't kill, what's the problem you have with those 10?
Well, I don't have any problem with any of them. So that would be a question you have to ask somebody else, because I live by that.
Me too.
Yeah. Pretty simple to me.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you took the time to sit down here and talk with me. I appreciate it. Like you said, I know you told me that Joe does everything, and I was glad to get you to come on and speak your mind for a change.
Well, he does all the technical things, technical interviews. And when I asked him about what you were doing, he said, "Oh, it's just an interview. You just sit and visit with Steve." And I thought, well, that's cool, because I know Steve. That ain't no problem at all. But when you said it's an iPod interview, I didn't know what that meant.
Oh, yeah, no, it's just sitting down here recording, and then it just goes out over the internet, like internet radio. So,
right. Well, I've done internet radio, but I never had it framed to me as iPod. I know what iPod is, but I didn't know really what you were doing. So I thought, well, I want to ask Joe, and he said, "You just talk to Steve. It's all it is." I said, "On the phone?" I said, "Yeah, I got it." So that's fine.
I got it. Well, let me ask you. I got a. I posted on Facebook. Let me find it real quick here on my computer. I posted on Facebook that I was having you as my guest and asked people to give me some questions to ask you. And
okay.
And let me see if I can find them here real quick. And. Where is it? Let me call up my Facebook again. I should have had this ready. This is what they say when you, since I'm recording,
that's no problem.
Okay, I can edit this. Let me see, and I'll read you. Okay, here's what I wrote: "Landed another big star for my podcast tomorrow. I'll be interviewing Oak Ridge Boys lead singer Dwayne Allen. Got any questions?" So this is some of their questions, and if you don't want to answer, you don't have to. But
go for it. I'll answer any question you ask.
Okay, these are some of them are very, very funny and very odd. Okay, the first one is from Nora, and she wants to know, what do you think of today's so-called country music?
Well, I think it's great. I think country music has taken the place of rock and roll. As far as I'm concerned, there is no good rock and roll anymore. It's all mainly gone into hip-hop and rap, and I'm not knocking hip-hop and rap, but rock and roll to me is a form of music that still had good melodies and lyrics in it, and good music. And I think probably country music is filling that gap. We still have the traditional country music artist in country music. I think if you look at artists like Jamie Johnson and some of these new acts that claim George Jones as their mentor, we're one of those, actually, because we're actually singing at George Jones' memorial tomorrow night.
I know, I'm so jealous.
Singing a song that we recorded with George Jones in '82 called "I'm Still the Same Old Me." I guess probably one of the last hits George had, and that was us singing on there. And we look forward to going down and honoring the memory of George Jones, and everybody that's anybody is going to be there.
Yeah.
And I would say everybody that's anybody that goes to that show and is on that show are people who have been influenced by George Jones.
Yeah.
I think probably my answer to that question is there are always new things happening in a field of music that's growing, and country music is the biggest, fastest-growing music entity in all of music. So I feel like that the new kids on the block are bringing in new people that once again have an opportunity to hear the Oak Ridge Boys, and our ticket sales for this Christmas tour are up 20%. So I think the water, when the water rises, everybody in the water that doesn't sink is rising too.
So are you following Ronnie Dunn's fight with country music and radio? Have you been aware of that?
I don't follow anybody's fight. I leave that to them. I don't fight country music at all. I know where country music, major country music radio is. I accept that. And I know that we are past our period of time where they will play us. Ronnie Dunn probably is too. If he wants to fight it, that's his choice. I choose to not do that. I choose to go to television and get television to put us on TV, and we still get exposed. And all that we have to do is just let people know we're still alive, and they'll come to see us, because over the years we've built a reputation that we will give them a great show. And our show is where we pay our salaries.
Right.
It's never been from radio or television. Some acts base their career on what their last biggest hit was. Well, what happens if the next one doesn't hit? They're out of business. We've never done that. What I've done with radio and television is use it as a promotional tool to get people to come to our shows. And then we give them the best show they've ever seen. Then people keep coming to see us when our records are not at the top of the charts. So I leave the fighting to those who want to frame it like that. And while I do that, I will say that Ronnie Dunn is one of the greatest vocalists that's ever been in country music.
I have to agree with you on that, too. Well, here's a question that goes along right with your show. Todd Lohr wants to know, what is your favorite song to sing?
My favorite songs are usually the songs that are very personal. I like Heart of Mine. I like Sail Away. I'm Setting Fancy Free. Dream On. I Guess It Never Hurts to Hurt Sometime. I love message songs.
Me too.
I love songs that touch people's hearts. Now, I would be remiss if I didn't say that Elvira has paid off more of our bills and bought us more new homes and cars than most of the others put together. So I love novelty songs as well. And Elvira is a novelty song. Man, it's written about a street in East Nashville. It's not even written about a girl. They just kind of wrote that in there so that it could sound like it was about a girl. But the Oom Papa Mau Mau's are the Chug Holes in the street called Elvira, and it's still in East Nashville. There's an Elvira street there. That's what that song's about.
Oh, because somebody, I'll find this, asked me the question, wanted to know if that, let me see if I can find it real quick. They said, they wanted to know, oh, Chris Wilde asked, he said, is that one song about Elvira, is that the song about the lady that hosted the movies, The Mistress of the Macabre? So now we know it's not about that Elvira, it's about the street.
No, we met Cassandra. She's a hoot. I think she's a character that picked up on that name and built a character around it. That's not even her name. I think she probably heard the song and wanted to build a character around that name, because the song was written in 1966 is the first time I heard it. That was 15 years before we recorded it, by the way.
Uh-huh.
And I knew the song when they pitched it to us for us to record it as a country group. When I first heard it, we couldn't record it. I was with another group, and we were singing gospel music.
But you loved the song then. Well, Chris Connell,
I never forgot it.
Chris Connell,
go ahead,
writes and said, he wrote to Oom Papa Mau Mau, what the hell does that mean?
That's the Chug Holes in the street. You're driving down Elvira Street in East Nashville, and your car starts hitting the Chug Holes, and that's the Oom Papa Mau Mau. That's where it comes from. Giddy Up is like, comes from the Lone Ranger series, High Old Silver,
uh-huh.
Like Giddy Up, High Old Silver. In other words, get me on a horse, get me off this rough street, let me ride a smooth horse. High Old Silver Away.
And Away. Todd Lower, he wants to know, what song did the boys never agree on singing together? Did y'all ever have a song that none of y'all could agree, like, to record?
Well, there's one song we recorded that we enjoyed doing it because of who we did it with, but we didn't really ever like the message that we were singing. We were a gospel group at that time, and the song wound up being a part of the reason one of our members got a divorce. And it was a song we recorded with Jimmy Buffett called "My Head Hurts, My Feet Stink, and I Don't Love Jesus."
Y'all recorded that?
That's us.
Oh, I remember Jimmy Buffett. Yeah, but
that's us on the record.
Oh, I did not know that. A little. That's beautiful.
Well, we haven't really publicized it that much.
That's
because what happened is our manager said, "I got this chance for you guys to record with Jimmy Buffett." Well, we all love Jimmy Buffett, so we said, "Sure, put us in the book." Well, we got to the book. We got to the studio, and he said, "I've just written this song on the way into the studio. I'd like for y'all to record this with us." So he started singing it, and we just sang along with him. It wasn't really into it, but it was Jimmy Buffett, you know, and he was our friend, and recording with Jimmy Buffett was such a trip. We just, you know, it just happened.
My head hurts, my feet stink, and I don't, oh man.
You know, it wasn't something that we believed in at all, but like he's talking about a guy that tied on a drunk, and he don't like anything.
Right,
you know?
He's hungover.
You know, if you listen to it, it's not really all that bad, but the title just sounds awful if you're a gospel group. We also cut another song on that album called "Hotel Room."
Y'all were on that one?
That's us, too. One song that we did agree on cutting that did real well for us is "Slip Sliding Away" with Paul Simon. And that one we really love. That's our first gold album that we ever got on our wall was from us recording "Slip Sliding Away" with Paul Simon.
That's a great song.
We were a gospel group at that time too.
Now, how did y'all transition from gospel to just straight country?
Well, it wasn't really a choice that much. We were really having a hard time because we were wearing all these really slick clothes and letting our hair get long and hired a rock and roll looking band, and the gospel music people were having some rejections to that and trying to find everything in the world to trash us about. So we were really having a hard time getting dates. So we went to see Johnny Cash and talked to him, and he said, "Well, I'll take you to Las Vegas with me and Lake Tahoe and Circle Star Theater out in California. I'll put some dates in your book and help you along." Well, when we worked Las Vegas with Johnny Cash, we got blackballed from country music, from gospel music, excuse me. And the dates that we had been getting in gospel music, it's very much a business that's pretty well closed. And most of the dates were promoted by basically six promoters that promoted all of the United States. They took their area of the United States, and that if you went to the West Coast, that went one promoter. You went to Texas, Oklahoma, that was one promoter. You went up to the Northeast, that was one promoter, and so on. There were about six of those. Well, the year that we worked Las Vegas, which I believe was 74 or 75 in that era, we didn't have any country music out at all. We were still a gospel group. All we did on Johnny Cash's shows in the Hilton in Las Vegas were gospel songs. We didn't know any country songs. But we got blackballed anyhow. And those six promoters that normally put about 120 days in our book every year, they put 3 days in our book the next year. and we were basically shut out of the gospel music business. We were blackballed. And it took us about a year to realize this ain't going to change. So we put together some of our own dates and nearly starved to death. And Jim Halsey put us on some dates up in the Northeast. And Roy Clark couldn't make the first set of dates. It was a week in a theater and around in Connecticut, and another week at Melody Fair in Buffalo, New York. And so Roy Clark got sick and couldn't make them, or he was doing hee-haw or something. So they hired us and Mel Tillis to take Roy Clark's place. And we tore up the show.
Yeah.
And when Jim Halsey heard about how we ripped up the Connecticut shows, he flew to Melody Fair in Buffalo, New York, and out in the parking lot, he said, "You guys are 3 minutes away from being a household name, but I've got to get you with a label that believes in you." We were on CBS. They didn't know what to do with us. And he said, "I've got to get you with a label that believes in you." Well, we had been to all those labels, and all of those labels told us, "We've already got a country group. We got the Statler Brothers. We don't need another group." And I would say, "Well, don't you have more than one male artist? Don't you have more than one female artist?
Good point.
Why just one group, you know?" And very honestly, CBS had signed us, and they wanted to try to do something with us, but they couldn't figure us out either. And the mindset with all the people at CBS were pretty much the same way as what I just said the whole industry was. We've already got a group, you know? So one man, Jim Fogelsong, said, "I can see it. I can see the Oak Ridge Boys with ABC Dot, and I will sign the Oak Ridge Boys." And so we had a few obstacles. Very soon after that, before we had signed, though, we were in New York City, and we were talking with different people, and I told Jim Halsey, I said, "If you will set a meeting with me and Jim Fogelsong, I will consummate a verbal agreement with him, but first, I've got to make sure that we get our release from CBS." So CBS had been telling us, "We will release you, but it'll be in the mail." Well, it never came in the mail. So I called CBS in New York, and we were there, and I said, "You have been telling me you got our release ready. You just never have mailed it. Why haven't you mailed it?" I said, "Do you actually have our release ready?" And he said, "Yes, I'm looking at it right now." And I said, "The next person to knock on your door will be William Lee Golden. You let him in, sign that release. He's going to take the release out the door, and we will be off CBS." So that's how that happened. And when they told me they would do that, I sent William Lee to CBS, and I went into a meeting with Jim Fogelsong and Jim Halsey on ABC Dot, and we consummated a deal in New York City that we later signed in Nashville, but we did a verbal agreement in New York. And then Jim Fogelsong and I flew to Washington, and I was scheduled to go there on copyright legislation, which I was lobbying with our publishing interests. I was lobbying Congress there, and we did a late night show with Charlie Rose, Jim Fogelsong and I did, on the copyright legislation of what we're trying to get passed. And Jim Fogelsong and I got really tight. Jim Fogelsong was like a savior to us, and he was the only guy in Nashville that said there's a place in country music for more than one group.
Thank God he did.
And the next challenge was to get her a producer. Well, he sent Ron Chancey to see us in Oklahoma City. We were playing the Lincoln Plaza Dinner Theater up there. We had learned a few country songs. We'd learned three country songs, Let Me Be There, Silver Wings, and Faded Love, so that they could bill us as a country act. Those were our first three country songs.
Good songs.
And so Ron Chancey went out there and heard one show, and he said, man, all I got to do is get back to Nashville and find you some songs. What he was really worried about is he had the Miller Beer commercial, and he was producing all of those Miller Beer ads, and he was afraid he would lose his beer ad because we were covered from gospel music. So we told him, look, you're producing, you can produce anything you want, we just want you to produce country hits on us. So he found the Y'all Come Back Saloon, and it's kind of ironic, we cut the Y'all Come Back Saloon, and coming from gospel music, it was always kind of weird to know that we got to number two with the Y'all Come Back Saloon coming from gospel music, and they're sitting in first place, and it wouldn't budge, was a song called Heaven Is Just a Sin Away.
the Kindles.
There you go.
Yeah.
Good call.
Yeah.
Royce and Jeannie, our neighbors.
Are they your neighbors now?
Yeah, they were. Jeannie's still around. Royce has passed on, but Jeannie's still around.
Yeah, I used to love the Kindles. That's a big jump from gospel to bar music, to the saloon song.
Well, if you stop to think about it, Y'all Come Back Saloon is about a church singer that sings in the saloon on Saturday night.
Well, now
that's what that's all about.
Yeah, now that you put it that way, yeah, I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah. In fact, coming from gospel, I asked them to change two lines in it that really drew it more to the church, so to speak. I didn't want to rub it in the gospel music people's eyes because I still love gospel music. I was just tired of the business practices. So there was one line there where it was originally written, lifting high his glass of whiskey. And I thought, well, ain't no use in saying it like that. So I asked him to change that to lifting high his glass in honor to the lady and the song. And the first line, the first rod of that next line was, he paid his tithes, then walked that lonesome cowboy home. And I thought, well, there's another place that no use to rub it in the nose of gospel people. I believe in paying tithes, but it's no use to have it in this song. It doesn't really do anything. And so we changed that to he paid his check, which is what he was doing.
Right.
And so all through our country music career, there have been time after time after time where we have had words change because we never really wanted to leave gospel music. It's just that they blackballed us. We always loved gospel music. It's the business that blackballed us. So what we've always tried to do, we've never really cut a bunch of songs about cheating or drinking or any of that. Our songs are family friendly, and we've kept them that way.
Well, that's probably what's kept you guys going, you know, is that it's very relatable to everybody through the years.
Yeah, you can bring your whole family to see the Oak Ridge Boys. You're not going to hear any four-letter words. You're not going to hear any suggestive lyrics. And it's going to be a clean show that you can bring your family. We're family entertainment, and we push that. That's the reason we hook up with people like Compassion International. That's the reason we built an organization years ago called Stars for Children. We built eight homes for abused children in the Dallas-Fort Worth area in a period of 3 years. We built eight homes out of the work we did there. And then we gave it to the city of Fort Worth to continue. So, I mean, we've always worked with children in some way or another. We worked with Feed the Children for about 30 years. We worked with Save the Children. And this year we've hooked up with Compassion International because studying their work, they get results. And we're really impressed with the work that they do. There's over 30 different church organizations right now, along with Compassion International, that are on the front lines today, right now, in the Philippines. And I like that.
Right, right, especially with going on now.
That's what I mean. You know, with the horrendous typhoon or hurricane or whatever they call it down there that wiped out complete cities down there, there's over 300 churches in conjunction with Compassion International that are there helping feed and save the families and children of those people who are in dire straits. That's the kind of people we like to be associated with.
Right. Well, that's because the Oak Ridge Boys are good people. And I appreciate you taking the time to sit down here with me. I know I kept you, I told you an hour, and we're like at an hour 20. I hope you don't mind. So
I haven't even looked at my watch.
Well, I appreciate it.
I enjoy visiting with you, Steve. I love you, man. Appreciate the work you do. You are absolutely one of the funniest guys on earth.
Well, thank you. As you guys know, I'm a major fan of the Oak Ridge Boys. And
I know that.
And as on my podcast, every time that I do a show, I always sign off the show by saying "God bless America" and go listen to some Oak Ridge Boys. That's the sign off of my show. So I get to say
thank God there's people like you that we've made friends with all over the United States that continue to bring our name up. You're one of the reasons why we still have people come out to see us. I really do appreciate it.
Oh, you're more than welcome. And if you ever want to do this again sometime, and you know, let's do it again. I love being able to talk and hear stories about the industry and you know, just.
Well, that's all I do. I mean, I work on my craft 24/7. It's something I love to do, and my biggest challenge is to keep all these people happy that we put bread on their table of about 80 to 85 people every day. And I just feel like it's important that we keep singing as long as God gives us health to do so, because we've given good jobs to good people, and I'm not sure at our ages how many of them could find this good a paying job and have as many fans built in as we have nationwide. And I thank you for keeping our name out there in front of the people.
Oh, you're welcome. Oh, one other thing before I go. I saw you guys are going to be doing an Oak Ridge Boys cruise tour. You're doing a ship.
We are. And we're going to the Caribbean, three different islands. We're going for 7 days. Go to our website, oakridgeboys.com. Just go there, and it'll pop up right at the top of the page. And call in and get your reservations. We're going to have a time. We're carrying Cherry Holmes with us. They've been broken up now for about 2 or 3 years. They're reuniting to go on our cruise with us. It's going to be a very, very special 7 days of picking and grinning and telling stories and snorkeling and getting wet together, and it's going to be fun.
I think it would be great, and that's why I was wanting to get that out there, so people can get up and get on and get on with that cruise with you. Now, here,
yeah.
I might, if it all works out, I'm hoping that I get on that cruise. So
good. Sell some memberships on your show there and fill up that cruise ship with us. We're going to have a ball, man.
Great. So
you can get up and do some stand-up with us.
So I'd love that. Now, they can find you. It's at oakridgeboys.com if they want the cruise information,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, just go to our main webpage. It's all over the top. You'll see a big ship come up, and just punch the link. It'll tell you all the details.
Great. Well, thank you, Dwayne. Thanks for coming on and doing the podcast Remasculate with me. And I will say to you as I sign off the show, God bless the Oak Ridge Boys.
Thank you, Steve. God bless you too, my friend.
Thank you, man. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
Have a good one. Bye-bye. Well, that was Dwayne Allen from the Oak Ridge Boys. I hope you enjoyed the show as much as we enjoyed doing it for you. Dwayne's a great guy. Go out and buy some Oak Ridge Boys albums. Support the band. Support music. God bless America. Go listen to some Oak Ridge Boys. And I bid you adieu. And aloha.